Hello, everyone, and welcome to The Debrief. I'm your host, Luis, and today marks our very last episode of 2023. And what better way to wrap up the year than with a bit of reflection? So if you haven't been tuned in, 2023 at Incident.io has been a wild ride. We've launched a bunch of new products like catalog and status pages. We've hired like crazy, sitting at nearly 80 employees as of this recording. We've expanded into the US, opening up a brand new office just a few weeks ago. And there's still so much more ahead of us. So as we close the curtain on 2023, I wanted to sit down with the three co-founders of Incident.io, Steven, Chris, and Pete, to take a look back at, again, what was a pretty wild and transformative year for us. We talk about challenges, big wins, moments of growth, what's next for us, and most importantly, what the three co-founders like most about one another. I think you're going to find this conversation really insightful, and I'm confident that it'll get you really excited for what lies ahead for us in 2024. So let's get right into it. Here is our year-end review with the co-founders of Incident.io. So this is the first time that we've had three people on The Debrief at the same time. So I just want to make sure that everyone knows who everyone is and what everyone does. So can you please go around the room and introduce yourselves and what you guys do here at Incident.io?
Yeah, sure thing. I can go first. I'm Pete, co-founder and CTO, and I focus mainly on the product and engineering team here.
I'm Chris, one of the other co-founders, CPO by title, but spend a ton of time in sales, CS, and now marketing, as well as working with Pete on product stuff.
I'm Steven. I'm the CEO. I guess I do my best to run the company.
So I'm going to start off with a pretty basic and easy question. Describe 2023 at Incident.io in one word.
So my one word for Incident.io in 2023 would be probably fast. And I think in a few ways, like partly the speed at which this company gets stuff done and ships, but also honestly, just it feels not that long ago that we were doing this for 2022, and I can't quite believe it's already the end of 2023 and I don't really know where the time's gone. Yeah, it's like the company was only like 30 people at the start of this year and now it's 77 and it feels like it's gone by like blink of an eye style. And I find that wild, honestly. But yeah, fast would be my word.
I am going to say magic for a few reasons. One, we solidified company values this year, which felt like quite a big milestone. And one of those values was make it magic, which is something we've like done, not as a sort of like an official value, but done as a sort of principle since the beginning of this company. So in practice, what that looks like is delivering small delight features for customers fast, and people reach milestones of using the product, ship them something nice like a cake that says congratulations. And I think if I look at why magic for this year, I think there has been an absolute ton of incredible products that we've shipped. It's been received incredibly well. It's being used really well. That feels amazing, but also magic in the sense of some of the customers that we've signed up this year. So honestly, if you had told me back in January of 2023 that we would sign up some of the names, and many of which we can't talk about.
Don't say the names, Chris.
I'm not going to say the names.
Say the names.
As I was to.
Pretend you're saying it was beep you out.
Yeah, we'll beep that out. Anyway, I think it is amazing. And that feels like a pretty magical result for the year.
Yeah.
Mine is foundational in that we started this year as a single product company, and that's great, but I think that the problem that we're trying to solve is much broader than that, and we will end this year with multiple products, which is really exciting. And then I think foundational in like the structure of the company that we're building, in that really it was three founders at the end of last year that were running most of the functions of the business. And now I'm surrounded by a great team to run things like finance, talent, customer success, sales, and so on, which is great. Like you can just see that we are starting to lay the foundations to scale the company. And yeah, I ended up moving to the US this year. So I was in London before with Pete and Chris. I moved to New York City at the end of January and helped build out our presence here as well. So we went from, I think, three people at this time last year to about 20-something in the US. It feels like we're now well set up to, go achieve world domination. We have all the structures in place to do it.
Yeah. So obviously, we're going to talk a lot about 2023 in this conversation. But one of the things that I'm really curious about is how this year actually played out compared to what we were projecting at the end of 2022. Did it align with what we set out to do? Did we exceed expectations? Did we fall short? Chris, let's start with you.
I think by pretty much all measures, it's exceeded, which feels like an incredible result, especially given like...
Also, it feels like a major backslap. Well
it,
done,
it,
us.
I'm sort of looking at it as like backslap versus what we thought we could achieve. And yeah. I think that is like pretty exceptional. So I think whatever axis I measure it on, you know, whether it's the customers that we signed, the company numbers like revenue that we've hit, things like that, the products that we've shipped versus what I expected we would do this year, I think there is just a whole raft of things where I'm just like, I can't quite believe it. So yeah, I think it's been an exceptional year, like far exceeded would be how I would describe it.
I think like the way that we kind of set out goals at the company is like, they should be the right amount of terrifying, in that like when you set the goal at the start of the year, you don't really think that you're going to be able to hit it, and it just feels unrealistic. Given that, I think we made amazing progress on all of those things that we set out to do. And yeah, just very, very proud with what we were able to do and excited to go into next year.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. I think it's kind of hard because when you're in the early stages, like every year is so long that it's really difficult to see more than kind of 3 months ahead, particularly when we were at the end of year two last year, right? Well, yeah, end of year two. And it's kind of, you're in like weekly, monthly, maybe quarterly mode, and sort of thinking, what will it feel like in a year? You just take, it's like sort of that'll do. That feels like ambitious but achievable. And it's kind of wild that we've got even close, or like exceeded in most cases, the goals that we set. I'm just like, did we really do that?
Yeah, I think actually, like something I remember at the end of 2022 was the sort of the growth targets that we had set ourselves for this year. And I remember how hard we had to work back in 2022 to sort of like win some deals and get some folks in sort of, you know, and sort of grow the company. And then I looked at this year and I was like, I can't even fathom how we are going to do that. And this is not deliberately planted, but like one of our company values is like find a way. And I feel like that has genuinely been like the tone of this year. It's just been surprising how well some of this stuff's gone, which again, it sounds like I'm just like slapping myself on the back permanently. Yeah. I don't mean it like that. I mean, it's just like, I'm sort of surprised in some ways, because for me, this is like first time I've built a company or been in this position, and everything is new. And so there is no like, you know, just trust that the process will work. Yeah. And if you do the right things will happen. It's like, everything is like, oh my gosh, we hit all the plans for Q1, and then we hit the plans for Q2 and then Q3, and then we're in Q4 right now. And it's sort of looking good. So yeah, I don't know. Yeah. I think it's been pretty solid.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah, Chris, I think you actually teed up my next question pretty well. So as founders, I can imagine, you know, we're on year two and a half, you know, three of Incident.io's life. And I'm sure you all still have those, oh my God, we are co-founders in this company moments. What were those moments for you? Just speaking for myself, I'm not a co-founder, but I am a dad. And every so often, my daughter Juno will do something, or like a moment will happen, and I'm like, oh my God, I have a 4-year-old daughter. When did that happen? So yeah, just anyway, total aside, but just wondering what your moments were as founders this year. Stephen, let's start with you.
Yeah, I think honestly, it is the companies that we ended up working with this year. And again, can't name them, but I would just think of, if you think of the largest and most influential companies in the world right now, you would be correct. And to me, it's cool because our customers themselves have hundreds of millions, if not billions, of customers in aggregate. And like, they now rely on us to help them when things go wrong because they need to provide a great service. And yeah, it's just wild to me. And very proud to work with companies that my mother has heard of as well.
Talking about the customers that we can't name, because I know that Luis has to edit this, I really, really do want to mention them by name behind my...
Yeah, Chris, why don't you just now just rattle them off, all the ones you're super, super proud of, and cool. We'll just... And that will get out of the system, and you can just beat them.
The ones I am, I think, most happy about, I think, is legit. I think is amazing. is quite the coup and amazing for, you know, a company to like us to be working with. So yeah, really, really happy with all of those. Yeah. And you're welcome, Luis.
I think I'm actually just going to let that play out and just beep it all. I think that will just FYI. So thank you.
No, I want some finessed beeping in there. You know.
Yeah.
Nice. I can go next on like pinch me moments. As I said at the beginning, like have assumed some responsibility over marketing at this company, which is honestly quite a wild departure from background as like an engineer or running like platformy type teams. And one of the things we've done in marketing this year is really ramp up our presence at events. So this is, you know, big conferences right down to, you know, small meetups and dinners and things like that. A few months back, we were in Chicago sponsoring KubeCon, Cloud Native Con, and I remember walking into the sort of the place where it was sort of being held and walking up these stairs up to the thing and seeing this enormous poster with Incident IO logo surrounded by IBM, Intel, Google, and a bunch of other similar companies. Okay. And just being like, this is kind of insane that this little company that tens of months ago was three people, then 10 people, is now sort of rubbing shoulders with these big people. And I should be very, very clear, this is not a case of I feel like, you know, we've made it because we've spent money on a conference that positions us beside these folks. But I think being in a position where we can do that and we can choose to do that is amazing. And for what it's worth, these conferences have been just like such a phenomenal thing for us to do. And like going and actually meeting people face to face is genuinely just like one of the highlights, I think, of the year for me, which is like the amount of like the concentration of running demos, getting feedback, talking to great people is just, yeah, I think it's an amazing moment.
Pete?
My pinch yourself moment, I think, so every year we do a sort of the equivalent of like a Spotify Wrapped for internal Incident IO. We do like a year in review, right? I think it's pretty typical for companies to do that. It's like the last all hands of the year. And we did this year's one sort of last week, and sort of every year it's sort of one of the only meetings we have, I guess all hands is certainly like an equivalent, where you stand up in front of the whole company. And I think this one's particularly special because you stand up in front of the whole company and you talk about like the whole year, not just like what's the last week been like, which is what all hands is typically covering. And I think, like, I guess two things. Like, one was you're going back like month by month. Like, this is some of the big events that happened in that month. And you're like, did that really only just happen this year? There was stuff where people are like, that was last year. And you're like, nope, that was February. And like, that was wild. And then the second is like the whole company's there and everyone's excited and everyone's thinking about like the achievements of the year. And there's just so many people. So I'm looking out and I'm kind of like, it feels like I'm at some sort of like meetup or conference or something because there's so many people now. And I think back to the first one of these we did when it was like 15 people sat on a couple of sofas. And like that's a real like, oh my God, the team is big and we're doing amazing things.
Obviously starting and running a company is very easy. That's why we all do it. No, but I'm just wondering from each of you, what was the biggest challenge for each of you this year besides working with one another?
So mine is I had a baby in August 2022. What? Don't I tell you guys about that? I guess it wasn't like, strictly speaking just this year, but like
total to seven.
I'm so lost.
Tell us about your baby.
It's all right. No, my opinions don't matter. Let's not bother. Yeah. Let's do something else.
Yeah, yeah. We will. Don't care about Pete's baby. No, tell us about your baby. It's important. It was a big impact on the company, but we weathered it well.
It was. It was a big moment, and I think you guys handled it really well. And so, you know, you all did a really good job this year with my baby. My biggest challenge this year, I think, honestly, it is really, really tough. I think particularly doing this at starting a family at a time where we're still quite early. It's in some ways getting easier now that we have more people, because I have more people I can lean on. I have more people that I can delegate to. Like, you know, it's less like, you know, unless I'm cranking the wheel, things don't move. And that was never really the case for like pure engineering. We had amazing engineers the whole way, but we're now sort of running organizations and, you know, we've got like 30, 40, 50, and now 77 people in the company. And like, it's been tough trying to build all of that while also trying to balance like work and home. And I know sort of Chris has been doing that since the very start, I think. Sort of, you know, in my case, just like learning to become a parent and a dad while also trying to sort of learn how to do a ton of other stuff at work for the first time. And I used to lean a lot on like, you know, I can work longer hours or I can sort of, you know, like flex my life to kind of figure stuff out. And now it's like, cool, I've got some pretty hard constraints. It's like, if I work late, I miss bath time. Okay.
Alfie's
bath time. I also bathe regularly, but like, yeah. So it's kind of, you know, those constraints, they matter a lot, right? And you kind of count those, I think. And like, I mean, you know, we joke, but like, you've done loads of travel this year, and it's like, yeah. I know the number of days that I've been out and I've missed, like, you know, mornings or evenings and stuff. Yeah. And I think that's been a major adjustment, honestly, for me, is kind of figuring out how to balance all of that. So yeah, I think that's been my biggest challenge, is just sort of, you know, learning to navigate parenthood and sort of founderhood, if that's the thing, at the same time.
It's been nice having someone that we can make dad jokes with, though, unashamedly.
I agree. Yeah, the pun that, like, I thought I was good before, but there's definitely some magic moment when you become a parent where you're like, oh, I get it now.
Yeah,
like, you know, the cheese level goes up. Exactly. And sort of, and your ability to spot puns is suddenly like, you know when they talk about how, like, you know, when Agnes got pregnant, she was like, I can sort of smell things that I could never smell before. Mm. I just, yeah, have that same instinct. I think,
yeah,
dads in particular get a, like, you know,
yeah,
terrible joke.
Well, it's like, you've spoken about, you know, getting home for bath time on many, many calls over the year, yeah. I would say. And every time I make the same joke.
Yeah, and it never gets old.
It never gets funny.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's
right.
It's crazy.
Pete, actually, I have one thing for you. Obviously, we're reflecting on 2023 at Incident IO, but I want you very, very quickly to reflect on fatherhood.
Yeah, I don't know. I think in the run up to like becoming a dad. So in all seriousness, in the run up to becoming a dad, I talked to quite a lot of other like founders who had families, and that's not because I think it's sort of, you know, something special to being a founder, but it was like, I don't know how you juggle this when you're not doing like a 9-to-5, because this is not a 9-to-5 job, and that's not what we signed up for either. I'm not surprised by that. And I got loads of really, really good advice. And I think some of it was very specific to like being a new dad and trying to start a company. And some of it was very general. And I think like one thing that I appreciated was, I think there was a lot of positivity, and I think you need that. And I think that's one of the things that like, being a founder definitely forces you to do. And I don't think negative founders honestly will make it very far. I think you have to be a pretty fundamentally like gritty and resilient person. And so like going into being a parent, I was like, I was fully prepared for like full on like Armageddon war zone. Everyone was like, oh, it's gonna be so hard. And I think honestly, like it's been amazing. Like I've loved it. And that's not to say it's been easy. It's been super, super difficult and involved a lot of hard trade-offs in both directions. But like, being a dad is basically the best job ever. And no offense to you guys, I love this job. But like, I don't know. I remember talking to Chris about it actually, because it's interesting because Chris is like obviously a bit further along in the journey by like, what, 8 years, 9 years or something at this point. And I think you described, when I was looking to have Alfie, I think you described being a dad as basically like, it is the hardest thing in the world, but I wouldn't change it for anything. And I think that captures it really nicely. It's like, it's like, oh my God, there are some days where just like, I don't know how I'm coping with this or how I'm going to cope with this. And then kids have a way of sort of going like, yeah, I appreciate you've had like a really shitty day. I don't care because I've got Lego to build. And also this is my new favorite cuddly toy. And I don't really give a shit that you've had a bad day at work. It's like a very perspective building thing. Anyway, that's my fatherhood reflection anyway.
For sure. I appreciate you sharing that. And I think it was a worthwhile question to ask, because I want to make sure that we all remember that we're all people at the end of the day. And we're not just, even the three of you are not just talking heads for Incident IO.
I mean, we get described as machines, Louis. So, you know, easy to forget is the thing.
I am, but
human.
But besides that, but Chris and Stephen, I wanted to give you guys an opportunity to answer the sort of biggest challenges question, if you guys could.
I think, like, honestly, so many to pick from this year, but something that has been, I think, markedly different this year versus other years and pretty much any other year of my career is the amount of travel I've ended up doing. Mm. And so, like, I use Flytee, like, the little, like, app that tracks all my flights based on, you know, importing all the things from email. It's very cool. It's a very nice app, but it tells you, like, all the stats of, like, how far you've been and when, all the kind of details. And I think I worked it out recently that this year I've been away from home like 71 days of the year. I've spent seven entire days at about 40,000 feet above the ground, and I've done like 20 long haul flights. It's ridiculous. Incredibly valuable to do, but doesn't come for free. It's specifically, I think, sort of related to what Pete's saying, like in the context of having a family. So my kids are quite a bit further along, and hard for different reasons, I think, leaving home. Like they are just like want to hang out, and a lot of weekends have been away from home and things. So yeah, I think that's been pretty tough. I think it will probably be a similar state next year, unless my wife's watching, in which case it will be.
markedly
easier, Joe, next year. Quick. Probably half as much. Don't worry about it.
We'll just beep out the first part of that response. Stephen.
Yeah, I think for me, it was moving to New York at the same time as growing the company. Part of it is just boring logistics and admin. It's like I have to go and do a bunch more work in a kind of schedule where there wasn't really a huge amount of space for adding, apply for new driving license and, you know, go get social security number or buy things for apartment. So that was just a lot. I would describe it as a lot of relatively simple and monotonous work to kind of end up moving, but got it done with like big help from my wife, who moved over here with me. And I think it was like readjusting to life in a different country, with like where the actual maturity of the company that we built in the UK is like ahead of the US right now. And that's not going to be the state forever, but ending up kind of ultimately sort of rolling back maybe a year or so to actually there's 3 or 4 people in an office now, and we don't have our own full space. We just have a corner of a WeWork, and really just kind of ending up, that was extra stuff that we had to spend time doing, but it was also like very rewarding at the same time. I mean, I can't speak to the sort of joys of fatherhood yet, but I mean, you know, after the five or six minutes that we had to be subjected to just there, but it's been rewarding all the same.
Yeah, just like being on the front lines of that growth in New York City. Like when I joined last year, it was 4 of us, I think, and you know, we had a little private office in WeWork, and then we moved to another floor where we had a bigger space, and you know, we had a fridge, and now we have our own like proper office with an espresso machine and a closet to put all of our snacks, and we're not sharing the space anymore. So it's been really great to see that from my perspective, seeing the exponential growth over the last year. But anyway, Stephen, I actually have another question for you. This is your second full year as a CEO at Incident.io. So I'm just wondering, what did the second year look like for you, and were you surprised by anything that happened in 2023?
Yeah, I think at startups, you might have a title, and that gives like the misnomer that you have the same job over the same time period. But in reality, I think most people's jobs at startups change every sort of 3 to 6 to 9 months, depending on the growth of the company. Mine, if we were to roll back like, you know, to 2022, I think that was a year where I was like selling the product relatively heavily. Like I wasn't on calls trying to work with customers. But then towards the end of the year, I spent time like hiring Ryan, who runs sales for us. And you then end up transitioning from like IC to, I guess, like manager and leader. And yeah, I think that has been the story of this year, is sort of hiring and surrounding myself with great leaders that can take functions off of mine or my co-founder's hands and start to run them more autonomously. And that the thing that is challenging there is like, What qualifies me to go and figure out what an amazing finance leader looks like? It's like not very much in my background, honestly. You know, have done product and engineering for years. And I think you just end up as a founder, like you have to be a learning machine. And I think that's a lot of what I had to do, was like, cool, well, it doesn't matter that you had no experience trying to hire these sorts of roles before. You just have to get good at it. So find a way to do it. That has been really the story of this year, is go and find great people to take things off your hands, despite you having no professional expertise, to actually either run them or go and spot amazing talent there. But you have to do it all the same.
Gotcha. Pete, just moving over to you. The product team in particular saw probably the most growth of any team here at Incident.io in 2023. And I'm just wondering, what does being at the helm of something of growth like that look like? Like, again, most growth of any team here. So was it easy? Was it challenging? Did you learn anything about yourself during that process? Just very like sort of reflection there.
Yeah. Piece of cake, honestly.
Yeah, no, for sure. That's what I thought.
Next question.
This is for you. No.
No, it's legit. I think the first thing to call out is sort of like it deliberately grown more than the other departments. It wasn't like it was like a race that I won or anything, that the job was like grow product by a significant amount. I think easy, definitely not. Like wild roller coaster. This stuff is always really difficult. Anyone that's tried to hire an engineer ever can probably attest to that, let alone trying to hire sort of 20 of them. I think the one thing that helped, though, is that a lot of the way we've built the team has been like extremely intentional, both in terms of like the early hires we made and then the second set of hires that we've made. And it's like, it's been very deliberate, like the shape of the teams, the way that we split those teams out, the way those teams operate. And it's kind of like been deliberately quite sort of explicitly constrained in how we did that. And I guess like a large part of that came from me going, this is how I'd like to shape my org so that I get the outcome that I want. And a lot of it's come from the team that you then hire who like align with that and believe with that. And then they drive it when you're not in the room. And that's helped a ton. I think not doing it for the first time has helped a ton as well. There's a lot of things that would have really, really stressed me out, where now I know like, okay, cool, this is going to be a rough patch and then we're going to get through it. And for other people, it's their first time and you can help coach them through that period of growth in the company. So yeah, like not easy, but sort of we haven't yet hit many things where it's like, oh, I had no idea that was going to happen. It's like, oh yeah, there's a stage where that breaks and then this other thing breaks and I kind of know what levers to pull to make it hurt a bit less. And the goal is never to avoid the pain altogether. It's more about like sort of getting through it pragmatically. And I think, you know, as long as you hire a fantastic team, that stuff becomes much, much easier. And that's really the thing that's sort of been the hardest, honestly, is like trying to find the people. If you find the great people, the actual like growing of the team and the scale doesn't feel so bad. So getting great managers, getting great product managers, designers, data team, like I really feel like we've kind of, you know, struck gold with a lot of those folks. So yeah.
Chris, your role is really interesting, and you alluded to this before, in that you're straddling the line between product, sales, marketing. So as a result of that, you speak with a ton of customers day to day. Just wondering, how have our customers informed what we've ultimately decided to do this year?
I think there's a few ways to answer this. If we look at many of our customers, they have been incredibly happy with what we've built, and they've been pulling out of us things that we had planned for this company to make this, you know, incident management product, this platform that we're building, what we believe is the best you can possibly buy on the market. And so we have sort of spoken to and onboarded some of the biggest companies, like Fortune 500 companies, many, many teams. Product at the beginning of the year, if I'm being like very honest, wasn't really in a position where it was ready for those teams. And we've built a lot of things on demand to work with those customers, to grow with those customers, and be able to deploy far and wide. And that looks like, you know, supporting multiple teams, multiple different areas within the company, all sorts of things there. The fortunate thing is that all of the things that we have been, or the vast majority of the things that we've been asked to build, are things that were just like on the roadmap. And so they're either like, it's like the easy prioritization decisions where it's like, okay, cool, well, insert big customer name here, says they really, really want this, and it's gonna be important to them. We'll bring that forward and we'll shuffle something else back out. So that's been like one way in which I think they've informed us sort of a bit of reprioritization based on the slight sort of, you know, the demographic and type of company that we're talking to. Other things that have been very interesting is we have some customers who are using us in ways that we never imagined or never imagined right now. And so you've got some customers who are using us and really, really stretching the definition of what an incident is in their context. And so you have some customers who are using us where like every time a customer gets in touch with their customer support and the customer support needs to talk to anyone outside of the sort of customer support function, they will raise an incident because that is a really convenient way for them to be able to manage those kind of service requests. And they will collaborate with engineers. They will sort of have back and forth integrations between, you know, interactions between Zendesk and Slack. And that's something we support out of the box. And so like that stuff is really interesting for us. And it's like, we know that this is a tool that is valuable outside of the context of like an engineer who is fixing a database that's gone wrong. This is the long-term intention for the company is to get there. But we've seen it sort of happen faster than we previously anticipated. So I think that's been very interesting.
I think one thing that like has been really nice is to see that the way that customers engage with us hasn't changed dramatically. I was kind of like a bit worried that we lose a bit of that early stage magic where customers are in the Slack channels and you're like, oh, it's amazing. Like the feeling of constant feedback. And it's kind of like, oh, but eventually we'll have to like work with grown up companies that are like really big and they'll work differently. And actually like kind of work very similarly, just much larger. So you just get 10 times the feedback.
Yes.
That's been really cool. But like that has in many ways like shaped the org a little bit, I think, in that like it's been like, oh, cool. Well, we could actually design a slightly different product shaped team or a different way that CS and sales and product work together because we're working with customers where like that dynamic works really, really well, as opposed to all of our customers need like tons of handholding and engineers are now three steps removed because it's too dangerous for them to speak to them. Or like, I don't know, it's sort of maybe it's like twist on the question, but I think that's been quite interesting.
Seeing, yeah.
Like that dynamic.
For sure. For sure. I think, yeah, to round it out, I think like it's super interesting that we now have a very broad cross-section of customers in a large variety of kind of domains and verticals, and going into 2024, knowing what our plans are for not just being a sort of niche engineering tool, but a tool that caters whole organizations. Having the basis that we have right now is honestly like amazing. We could not be better placed to get feedback relevant to all of the kind of plans that we have. So I think, yeah, I think it's been good this year. It will be sort of 10x as good next year is my prediction.
Chris, you teed up the next question quite well. What is next for us in 2024? So obviously in 2023, we did a lot. By all measures, we accomplished pretty much everything we set out to do and more. So obviously we're done. That there's no more work to be done there. But no, just what's next for us?
Yeah, a rest at Christmas, taking some time off. And then, as you say, I think it's just like coast for the next year. We're sort of
chill out.
Yeah, a little corner office.
Beats my answer, which was like probably do some more stuff next year. And
yeah, do it faster.
I don't know, Stephen, what should we do next year?
Yes, tell us, Stephen, what are we doing next year?
Yeah, I think next year is going to be very interesting, and like this alludes to what I said earlier. Like a lot of this year was kind of laying down foundations to be able to, I think, expand products, but also expand our team. So. Yeah, I kind of can't speak to specifics just yet. I think you will hear a lot more about it in early next year. But, you know, just one inevitable more step towards world domination, I think, is probably what 2024 holds for us.
Yeah, I'm excited. It's going to be epic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think like the way that if we're doing this again in a year's time, I would love to be able to look back and say, we are sort of the obvious choice that you would pick to solve the problems that we solve for you. So this is when something goes wrong in your organization, like you lean on us to handle all aspects of that. And we're in this market at the moment where it's like a little bit noisy, a little bit crowded. I think we have an early lead over competitors and we want to cement that. So it should be sort of obvious that you would choose us. And yeah, ultimately, like the goal of the company has to become this single place that organizations tell when stuff goes wrong. And we have put a lot of the foundations in this year to make that true. And then next year is hit the gas and make it happen.
Yeah. I'm excited. Absolutely. And last question, and this is probably the most important question I will have asked during this entire conversation. What do you all like most about one another? So Pete, you're going to tell us what you like most about Chris and Steven. Chris, Pete and Steven. Steven, Chris and Pete. Pete, we'll start with you.
Finish on some therapy. American. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say this is an intensely American question. This is very like LA good vibes to me. And is, you know, I think designed to strike fear into the heart of any British person that has to answer it. So, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
You're up first, Pete. Would love to hear what you love the most about me.
Great. This reminds me of several management training courses that I've been on. So I'm really enjoying reliving those. Yeah. What I like, I guess it's sort of that there's general things about like sort of why I appreciate about Stephen and Chris together. I guess like the first of the question is to make it really awkward and make me pick on them individually. I think if I pick like maybe like Stephen first, I think one thing that I particularly appreciate is I think our risk tolerances are slightly different. And that's really good in that like I will naturally be not like, I wouldn't say reserved. I'm definitely more like risk on than most people. You have to be as a founder. But I think Stephen is like even more risk on. And so I might go like, oh, I think we should like maybe think twice about that. And he's like, ah, I'll be fine. Right. And sometimes I'm right and sometimes he's right. But like that tension, I think is really, really good. I think if I was going to pick one thing that I appreciate about Chris, I think having another person at founder level who is like deep in the weeds on and cares deeply about the quality and sort of pixels, for want of a better term, of the products. He's like, this doesn't feel right. Like the team are really, really good at that. Don't get me wrong. Like they're absolutely excellent at shipping high quality product. But there's a lot of things where I feel responsible for the bar of what we ship out. And I think, you know, sometimes if I'm not paying attention or like maybe I push the team really hard to ship something fast and they quite justifiably cut a corner or two, there's maybe one that like we shouldn't have cut. And having someone else who will kind of at exec level go like, I don't think that's it, and call me and the team out on that, I think I really appreciate. And Chris has done a bunch of that this year. So yeah, I think that'd be my two picks.
Chris?
I'm going to cop out and just like collectively talk about them. I know I am. No, I am, but it's going to be sentimental. So yeah,
take my
hold.
Okay.
All right. It better be sentimental because you're breaking the rules here.
Yeah, my peak objective, make Pete cry. No, I would,
hang on, with constraints on how you achieve that goal.
I think there are many reasons why this founding team wouldn't have worked or shouldn't have worked or might not have been as good as it was. Like, whilst we all worked at the same company before starting this one, so we were all at Monzo, we knew very little about each other. I think I'd met Stephen face-to-face once ever in all the time that we were at Monzo, and the rest of the time was like on calls or maybe in passing and things like that. And honestly, not a ton more interactions with Pete.
Yeah, we mostly met over like incidents.
Yeah.
Things had gone wrong.
Yeah, exactly. And so like when the pandemic came along and we were like, oh, you know, start this company and do this thing, I think we had like a shared passion for the domain and a shared sort of like excitement about building a company and shared love of just like building stuff. And so that's good. But what, you know, and so that stuff's like, yes, that's going to work. But there are many, many people in the world that I don't like that much. Or
like, and I'm going to name them now.
Without being negative, but there's many
like
people you could put me in a room with and I'd be like, yes, I'm going to be very civil and like, but I would not consider you to be like friends. And I think that is actually like an outcome of this company that I've been surprised by, which is I would consider Pete and Stephen two of my very best friends that I told you, it's worth it. No, but like, but joking aside, I spend probably as much time, more time with these two than I do my wife and my children.
Yeah,
we spend time, you know, outside of work context, like Pete's home for dinner with his family at the weekend. Like, we go and hang out with Stephen. We go on like breaks and sort of plan stuff and do things together. And like, those things are like not the kind of things that are easy to do if you are just colleagues. And so I don't think that's the case. But yeah, rambly answer to say, I actually quite like him as much as it pains me to say.
Yeah. The best thing you like about us is that you like us.
Yeah. I like that. Yeah, I like great. It. It's very meta.
Stephen?
I will pay attention to the rules. You know, not going to break them. Don't see why you would. So I think the thing I like most about Pete is his ability to work really, really hard. I think there's many problems for which you should work smarter, but like in startups, there's just a good set for which is like, you should just work harder and put more hours in. And I feel like a bit of a wuss next to Pete, like his ability to just stay up until 3 a.m. and then, you know, working on a problem, get up at 5 to deal with Alfie and then be in the office at 8 a.m. is just like, I don't know how he does it. I feel like if I don't get 8 hours of sleep a night, I'm just some, you know, like interminable, you know, mess that I can't deal with. And Pete is amazing at just like grinding through that. And then on to Chris. I think I am like in admiration of Chris's abilities to sort of like weave between different things. It's like a legging product and a legging go to market. That's not very easy to do. And I think that requires like a unique set of skills, which is you have to be great at communication. And that's like two-way communication in that you need to be great at explaining technical concepts about product to go to market folks, but you also then need to be able to synthesize like messy, raw customer feedback to product. And to some extent, people are doing this without Chris, but I think Chris is like a unique puzzle piece that allows you to connect the two of them. And it's not, I don't think it's like a skill that the average person has, is to be able to do both those things really well. Appreciate you both greatly.
Yeah, I'd plus one that. I think the way I frame it is like when we have our biggest, gnarliest, scariest deals, it's like I always feel better when I find out Chris is close to them, or like, you know, it's Chris that I'd want on the stage. So yeah, big plus one. I should have picked that.
Secretly, I'm just telling every department of this company that I'm working in a different department. I'm just bouncing between doing
like six dinner stage. Yeah. You're just sort of like, yeah, no, I'd love to help you, but I'm so busy with that.
Marketing. Oh, so hard.
I just have to say for the people who are listening to this and not watching this back, Chris gave a look to both Pete and Stephen before they gave their responses when it came to saying what they liked about him. And I do think that it worked.
Right.
Forced them to say something very, very nice.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, thank you three for joining us today. I think it's fair to say that 2023 was amazing. And I think it's fair to say as well that 2024 will be even more exciting. So excited to be here. And if you're a customer, be on the lookout for some really, really great things. And if you aren't a customer yet, what are you waiting for?